Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Pellegrini Financial Investment Planning Council third quarter conference call, Markets, Trump, Politics. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Ryan Markham. Please go ahead, Mr. Markham.
Thank you, operator, and welcome everyone to our third quarter conference call, Markets, Trump, Politics. And then I'll play on the words there in regards to our recent events of politics and elections. Trump, which we always talk about, of course, and everyone concerns about how that impacts the markets. I'm going to start off just a little bit, actually. On the last conference call, we talked about globalization a little bit, and I just kind of want to reiterate a couple of things there that play into this call as well. But, you know, when we go back over the last few years, globalization, it was really trying to tie in how it's all intertwined, or so much of it is intertwined between different economies and companies, and how they, you know, certainly operate from one end of the globe to the other. And we, over the last few years, of course, had more of what they refer to as a synchronized global growth pattern in the economic world. And I guess more recently, it probably has turned to more synchronized economic slowdown. And we've seen, of course, economies slow here in Canada, U.S., Europe, and Asia. And I think that just reflects a little bit of how much the globe is intertwined so much between each other, and that it does pull down or pull up different economies when some of the bigger ones start heading in a certain direction. When we talk about, you know, markets, Trump, politics today, I think that's where, again, you know, there's a lot of political headlines that certainly hit the news, some of it which impacts the markets to some degree. They're always short-term in nature, but some of it which does not. Certainly close to home here in an Alberta election, no one cares too much about who's in power, or the federal election, again, probably outside of Canada, no one cares too much about who's in power necessarily. At the end of the day, it's usually external forces that have more of an impact on our local economies or national economies than what is done from a political standpoint. And that's where even things like Brexit, which is, you know, kind of headlines for European news nowadays in European markets. A lot of companies, you have to understand, of course, adapt to these situations. And so you've seen over the last few years, I mean, this has been 2-3 years of Brexit talk, I guess, but certainly a lot of corporations have already structured themselves to deal with what happens if Britain leaves the European Union. So you've seen certainly a lot of financial companies move certain portions or aspects of their businesses to Europe mainland. You've certainly seen a lot of companies in Britain that have rebuilt different supply chains through Ireland versus Britain itself. And whether it's good, bad, or otherwise for Britain as an economy, my point being that a lot of these companies aren't going to be caught by headlines, aren't going to be caught by a political change. They understand what needs to happen for their businesses to function efficiently. And that's where they adapt. And that's where, I guess, from a globalization standpoint and markets, Trump, politics, the reality is these companies are certainly aware of their surroundings, aware of their environment, and they are constantly adapting to changes that are going to impact their businesses. And so from our perspective and our manager's perspective, they're looking at those companies at who are adapting the best, right? Who are becoming the most efficient in how they operate and structure themselves in these changing environments, which, like I said, in a lot of cases from a political standpoint, it's external forces that have more of an impact than internal politics. So when we drill down to what the markets have been doing this past quarter, it was, you know, essentially maybe a bit of a dull quarter in that sense, because we didn't have a whole lot of movement either way in regards to market returns. We certainly had a little bit of volatility from end of June to end of September here, but markets generally were pretty flat. So we had, you know, the Canadian indexes that really were, I guess, flat is the best way to put it. They didn't move in any particular direction. We had some, you know, a little bit of recovery, I suppose, in some of the oil and gas sectors or certain segments of it. You know, the financials are pretty steady as they usually are. But it was a flat quarter. In the U.S., we had markets that were up marginally. Again, nothing really significant. And U.S., of course, typically led by those technology companies who, again, from a globalization standpoint, operate from one end of the globe to the other. So the companies, whether it's a Google or it's an Amazon, even a Facebook for that matter, I mean, they obviously are operating on all oceans, and they certainly have their revenue streams, which most U.S. companies on the S&P 500, we've talked about this way in the past even, you know, half of their revenues come from outside of the U.S. And again, that's another aspect of how these companies have grown so large and where they extend their operations to. Europe was up marginally, I think more so because of prior negativity in that market. You know, Brexit, of course, is still a headline news item there. Again, nothing's going to surprise the markets at this point in time. But Europe is slowing, and Germany, of course, which is more of the bellwether of the European markets and economy, again, that's probably where we've seen slower growth in Germany, and that's probably the one concern in that region is how Germany goes, is kind of how Europe goes. Asia was down marginally as a whole, more so, I think, based on continued trade war fears. And trade war fears is not, while it's a political thing, or political agenda, it is factoring in real costs, because trade wars and tariffs in particular obviously have a cost to it, and those costs are certainly something which businesses feel, or the economy is feeling, ultimately the consumer's feeling. And so Asia, of course, is impacted by that more so, and so those Asian markets were certainly down. And again, just going back to how companies adapt or economies adapt, you know, one thing, Asia just is not about China, of course, and that's, I know, the talk, certainly in the trade war front. But you've seen, again, how economies have evolved, and where a lot of those Chinese operations from years back have really shifted a lot over to Vietnam over the last number of years, to the Philippines. So you've seen, you know, some spectacular growth in some of those other economies that no one ever even talked about in years past. But it's also how they have grown out of the Asian economies and separated themselves from China, and are feeling in kind of almost a separate supply chain, if you were to say that, in regards to supplying, you know, the global supply chains for different products, services, whatever it is that they're manufacturing there. And you have seen a lot of growth in a couple of those niche nations, I guess. So while the overall year-to-date returns are still quite good, this third quarter really was a pretty flat quarter. On the fixed income side, I think that's where we, again, probably had a bit more volatility than the equities, for that matter. Yields, of course, and interest rates, of course, have been low for some time. They have been in decline, or certainly in the U.S. You know, they've cut a couple times here this past year. Canada has held firm in their interest rates. But when interest rates decline, technically that's a positive for the fixed income market. The problem, of course, is right now the yields are when they're low, but the yields are very flat. And you may have heard the term of an inverted yield curves and stuff like that, and that has occurred through this year a couple times, where shorter-term interest rates are higher than the longer-term interest rates, and they quite often compare the 2-year rate versus the 10-year rate. And that's, you know, usually a negative sign for the economy long term. That's, you know, again, come back to a normalized, I guess curve bell again. And so it's away from the inverted curve, but it is very flat. And of course, for consumers, and certainly at the retail level, you see that in a GIC rate, where, you know, whether it's a 1-year or a 5-year term, the spread between the two of what the bank would pay you is pretty nominal, like it's 10 or 20 basis points. And so you've seen a real compression of yields. And so the expectation right now with the interest rates, of course, is the U.S. is likely to cut again. This is coming out later today, I believe, is their next rate announcement. They could hold firm and then wait for a cut in the latter part of the year, but I would expect it would happen today. The markets are certainly expecting that. But how it impacts the fixed income markets, again, is where it does, you know, give a bit of a benefit to existing interest rate vehicles. The volatility on this end of the spectrum for the fixed income market was really where, more so in the high yield market, which is really the corporate bond, corporate lending sector, where there was more negativity to it. So we had some downside on the high yield end of the investment pools and markets. And that is more of a function of not interest rate changes, but more of a function of credit risk changes. And I think as the economies around the globe have been slowing, that obviously impacts economic performance and business performance, and that impacts credit viability for some of these corporations. And that's where we actually saw a bit more negativity in this past quarter, was really in that high yield space and credit risk. You know, when we come back to where we are at in regards to economic growth, you know, one thing that I'd probably point out is that, you know, there's still a lot of positive factors out there in the economic numbers, whether it's U.S., Canada, whether it's Europe or China. You know, employment is still quite strong, even if it's growing at a little slower pace. You've seen actually corporate earnings be at or better typically than expectations, and that's a good thing. I think a couple of the little finer points that, you know, could be indicators, I guess, going forward is manufacturing numbers, which actually have ticked up a little bit, industrial production, container shipments, and those kind of things, where we've actually seen a bit of an increase in this past month more recently. And so whether that's an indicator that economic growth has slowed to its lowest point and now moves up going forward or grows going forward at a faster pace, far too early to say. But those are some of the positive indicators that would maybe indicate the worst is behind in that regard. Or maybe they're just temporary blips. But that's where there is some positive, certainly, sentiment out there, and something that certainly traders and investors will look to. When we look at commodities in particular, gold, of course, is usually quite often the top of mind for most people. It's certainly been a bigger position in our portfolios over this last half year or more. It had a good quarter, more so down in this past month, but a good year as a whole. And so that's more been a defensive position for some of our mandates. Other base metals like copper, of course, has really been a kind of range bound and hasn't traded much at all. Tin, aluminum, that kind of stuff is down. Palladium, which has been on a run, really is something that's used in a lot more car manufacturing and for fuel efficiencies. And depending how, again, how one looks at that, that could be a positive for future growth of the economies. If demand for palladium is quite high, and it is and has been, which is, we've seen quite a run on the price of that particular commodity. Again, that could be another positive to the future economic growth. When we look at the energy markets, the oil and gas, I guess in particular, oil has been pretty steady in this mid-50s range. And certainly don't expect it to change that much. Supply-demand is pretty much on par at the moment, and there's no real drivers either way of pushing the price down or pushing the price up. You know, we had a temporary supply disruption in Saudi Arabia, which certainly made some headlines, but really didn't really move the price all that much. I mean, there's certainly some short-term reaction to it, but really, within the week, it all settled back down to its kind of normal pattern again. So there's not a lot to drive the energy markets. I think probably the bigger concern to them is slowing economies would indicate slower demand for energy, and that would certainly have a negative impact. And maybe we're seeing some of that in oil, in even the U.S. market, because right now oil rigs, of course, have been in decline there for the number of them running, and been a negative numbers for the last probably 7-8 months now, and even into Texas, that matter, has been, you know, fewer rigs running than there has been for the last year and a half. So, you know, that's something where that might be a void that eventually gets filled by Canadian supplies. Time will tell. When we look at natural gas, again, it's been really range-bound at that $2 range. And really, until there's an ability to, you know, liquefy it and ship it elsewhere, there's probably not much upside to natural gas market. It makes it for cheap energy for ourselves here in North America in particular. And, you know, I guess for the average home, that's a good thing. I think on the inflation front, I mean, that's inflation where generally, the benchmark has always been kind of 2% inflation rate. And interest rates is usually a method to combat inflation when inflation is increasing. Of course, right now we're seeing rate cuts. Inflation really is not, I don't think, a concern for most central banks. And I think right now the central banks are more concerned with economic growth, and we've seen, obviously, certain central banks cut rates to help, you know, turn that ship around. We've also seen central banks start flooding more of the market with cash again, right? So we've seen them, you know, create a bit more quantitative easing into the markets to help, again, turn that ship around in regards to economic growth. And so I think inflation itself is probably less of a concern for central bankers and probably for portfolio managers. Perhaps more than anything, deflation is more of a concern in the sense of interest rates going down and or inflation kind of going with it. And you know, I guess everyone looks at Japan in the last 20, 30 years that went through that deflationary period. Does that happen beyond their borders? And that's something I think that probably is on their back of their minds. It's certainly not anything that people are talking about much today. But that's where I think, like I said, inflation has been a tough one to evaluate in the sense that we've had over this last number of years a pretty steady and consistent growth in the economies, and we just have never really seen that in the inflation numbers. And so if you have an economic slowdown, what does that do to inflation? So, you know, like overall, I think there's a lot of good indicators in the marketplace that, like I said, might indicate or could indicate that the economic slowdown is kind of at its bottom and things might, you know, recover and turn the other way. Like I said, as it is, it's still positive economic growth in most parts of the world, if not all. You know, there's, like I said, a few outliers, like maybe Germany, that's kind of at kind of recessionary type of levels. But in Canada and U.S., again, we still have positive economic growth. And while it's slowing, it's still positive. And like I said, there's a lot of numbers around there that indicators, I guess, that would say that, yeah, it's still a pretty healthy market in regards to, like I said, employment numbers and manufacturing and so on and so forth. I think the outlook going forward is more certainly data dependent, and I think more than anything consumer specific. And so, you know, certainly the economies in the U.S. in particular and somewhat in Canada has been reliant on the consumer still being positive and still spending. And so that I think becomes the biggest driver of which direction markets go, and at this point that still remains positive. I think with the low interest rate environment, that is certainly good for economic growth, quantitative easing that you know, central banks are trying to pump into the system again, is good for economic growth. And you know, I think the only other concern that would happen or impact that is levels of consumer debt and or government debt. And while it doesn't, you know, while Trump has been in power, of course, in the U.S., no one's really been concerned with debt until Democrats get in, and then everyone's concerned about debt. I think at the household level, you know, the U.S. market as a whole certainly isn't as indebted as the Canadian side, and that's where Canadians, again, probably are stretched from a household level standpoint. And so that probably should be more concerning for the central bank here and for the governments that are in charge. But in the U.S., I think that's still where there's a lot of room to grow there yet in that economy. And so, you know, I think for where we go from here, it's really, again, very data-specific, and I think from an investment standpoint, company-specific, right? So we're still more in defensive modes or positions in many respects, and I think that is indicative of which way things could turn, but where, you know, the powder's ready. So if it's where the economy's turning around and our managers want to jump back into the markets, they got the ammunition to do so. And if it goes the other way, they're already in a defensive position, so they can weather a bit more of the downside if that's what's going to occur. So at the end of the day, I think if you guys wrap it up with this, hopefully you got some information and enjoyed this call here today. Certainly at any point in time, if you have questions in general or specific to your situation or your portfolio, certainly feel free to call in and speak to Perry or Parker or myself, and we'd certainly be glad to help you. Once again, thanks for joining us, and look forward to the fourth quarter call in 3 months' time. Bye for now.